Hey.
Without further ado,
WBSM presents The Barry Richards Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Text us using app chat on the WBSM app. Now, The Barry Richards Show.
It is 108 on this Friday afternoon. 508-996-0500 is our phone number. And thank you for joining us. Appreciate it very much. Joining us on the line right now is our good friend Tim Dunn, the political writer for the Boston Herald. And he joins us each Friday afternoon for, I guess, breaking news, and because there's always breaking news in Massachusetts, and updates on things that we're following. Hi, Tim. How you doing?
We're doing great, Barry. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. So, Governor, got you busy today, or is she on an off day, or what's going on?
We didn't get any of her public schedule today, Barry. So, you know, I have no idea what she's doing, and I won't know until they actually tell us.
So she's, that's right, she doesn't always keep us abreast of what her plans are, right? I mean, we find out sometimes, most of the time, I guess, after she's done things, what's going on. Unless she's looking for publicity, then we find out about it. But
we'll go out and talk about that. Yeah, usually in the weekends, you almost never on the weekends, and you know, pretty rarely on Fridays too. She likes to get out on the weekend early.
Yeah. So she's had quite a week, though. She's gotten involved in a couple of things. And by the way, the courthouse gate story that you've been working made national news today. I don't know if you saw it on your former employer, Fox News, had it on its Fox News digital website today. So again, corruption in Massachusetts is making headlines outside of Massachusetts. So the rest of the country is watching what's going on here.
Oh, yeah, Barry. I mean, I tell people, you know, I actually forwarded our story to the Libs of TikTok person. I developed a communication with her on X. When I told her, I shared it with her. I said, look, I think Massachusetts is trying to compete with, like, California, Minnesota for the blatant corruption going on. I think the other ones that have a run for their money right now. And it's pretty clear. I mean, $2 billion, Barry, it makes you think about your life choices, doesn't it? I mean, I should have urged my girlfriend to run for Congress so I can get a $2 billion deal.
So what are you hearing out there? I mean, these stories drop, and usually when something like this drops, you know, there's some kind of a ripple effect, there's reaction to it out there in the political world and elsewhere. I haven't seen much in the media about this, the Massachusetts media. Is anybody else reporting on it? Is anybody talking about this?
So it's funny, you know, you don't see much of it, and I'm surprised too. You don't see it at all on the TV outlets. You don't see it at all in the Globe. The Globe actually had originally reported on it, but only focused on John Barrows, the executive director of the MCCA, who's also co-owned that company with Presley's husband. But you get a lot of good reporting from Mike Urban. He's an independent journalist on YouTube. You get Mass Daily News all over it. You got, and that's why it's really important, by the way, to have independent journalists, because the legacy media, for the most part, besides, you know, really the Boston Herald, you know, the Barry Richards, the Chris McCarthy's of the world, the Howie Carr's of the world, aren't reporting on it. And in my summation, I'm not inside 7 News, I'm not inside WCVB, I'm not inside WBUR, but what I imagine is they don't want to spoil their weekly or monthly interview that they have booked with the governor, so they don't want to go and focus on that story, which is totally against my instinct, and I know against your instinct.
So the Globe version of events here focuses only really on John Barrows, who's the convention center, interim convention center executive director at this point. They don't really get into the Conan connection at all?
Oh, not only do they not really get into it, they don't even mention his name or Presley's name once in that entire
article.
How
do you do that? How do you write this story without making that connection? That's the big, important connection.
You work at the Boston Globe. That's how you do it, Barry.
I mean, that was even the headline on the Fox News story about this today. You know, a squad member's husband, yada, yada, yada. And, I mean, because that is the big story here. You know, certainly the fact that Barrows is involved in this is important as well. But, I mean, we're seeing this kind of stuff. I mean, didn't we just hear all about Ilhan Omar's husband and, you know, how he made all kinds of money and stuff like that and all these different contracts and how they became millionaires. I mean, that was all just big news. And here we are, a very similar case right here in Massachusetts, and the Boston Globe doesn't even find that important enough to report on.
Well, Barry, when you're a media organization who's owned by a billionaire, known very big liberal donor in John Henry, you know, how can you really expect to have, you know, non-biased reporting? I mean, they also, you know, they also, kind of like how I just said, they want to secure that interview with Anna Presley if she ever makes a run for Senate or if she ever has a big announcement. I know they were the first ones to have her officially launch her campaign. They had that news. So that's what I believe they're more focused on. They want to be able to play to their party and promote the Democrat Party. As Howie says pretty perfectly, they're Democrat operatives of press passes, at least at the Globe they are.
All right, so this thing hits with a thud. I guess it was last week or maybe earlier this week. I don't recall. You know, you got a $600 million contract to build a new courthouse in Springfield, and they're going to keep it. We're going to lease it from them. And we're talking about $2 billion potentially over 40, maybe 60 years of the life of this contract. And you've got the politically connected head of the, or acting head of the convention. And the husband of a congresswoman, a sitting congresswoman involved in this, they're going to make some big money off of this deal. So this story hits. You are the first reporter to hit Governor Healey with this for her reaction. And she essentially tells you, hey, no big deal. This is the, you know, procurement process was great. This is the people are going to benefit. You know, I like to save the taxpayer money and this is going to do it. And it dies right there. I mean, back in the old day, we would be camped outside of Maura Healey's house, you know, trying to get more reaction from her on this and ask her why she is not demanding that this contract be rescinded and it go back out to bid again. But nobody seems to care about this.
No, it blows me away. It really blows me away. You know, it's one thing with the Boston media outlets not really caring. I guess it's kind of par for the course with them. But with Governor Healey, too, you know, talk about, one, staying in line with whatever the Democrats say, because you know the Democrat Party is smart enough to have talked about this story before it really blew up, and you know that they're all on the up and up about it. So, but you got to think, too, it wouldn't even hurt. It would honestly serve her for her reelection purposes if she actually was on top of it or at least pretended to be. All she needs is a statement saying, oh, this is, you know, we're going to look into that, and then you never look into it, and you know, only the little old Boston Herald will press you on it to look into it. Otherwise, you'll be kind of scot-free. But I guess her initial instinct is just to lie and deny, like on so many other things, from Lamar Cook to different benefits he'll give us with quote unquote reducing energy costs. It's just lie after every scandal. And this one is, I think, probably the biggest one besides Lamar Cook, in my opinion, for Healey.
Well, this is a big scandal. You know, we had the Monica Tibbett nuts story, which you covered extensively, you know, with the Apple tree company and the bidding for the vendor rights on the Mass Turnpike and all that. That was a big story. And, you know, we saw at least that Monica Tibbett nuts was shown the door. Okay. She's got a lot of money to leave, but you know, maybe it was, hey, Monica, you're making me look bad here. You got to get out of here and here's some cash. Get it, go away. And, but this is a bigger story for a lot of reasons. This is a big story, first of all, because it's never happened before. We've never leased a courthouse that I'm aware of that we use taxpayer money to build. State has always built its own courthouses and we run them and so on and so forth. So that's a new angle on it, which is interesting. And by the way, the mayor of Springfield is not too happy about this either, because he feels as though this takes away work from local contractors that could be doing the construction on this job. So he's not happy about this. We got lawsuits from at least two, as you point out in your reporting, and from at least two of the bidders that were rejected on this. But this is a big story, even bigger than that, because you've got the connection with Anna Presley, whose husband spent 10 years in prison for drug charges and for, I believe, gun charges as well. All of a sudden, this guy's become a millionaire. And he's become a millionaire because people in the political system keeps throwing him bones and keeps giving him opportunities to make money. And so, I mean, this is why the corruption in this state is, you know, it's so significant, and yet it just keeps getting played down and played down and played down. This is, to me, a big, big story, and it should be the lead story every night on every newscast.
Oh, absolutely should be. I mean, again, you have honest and good journalistic instincts, and you're absolutely right. And, you know, I think I tuned in, I was able to hear some of your call yesterday with Holly Robichaud, and she pointed out, too, how this comes off on the heels of the Apple Green Service Plaza debacle. And, you know, and the people involved there, after this is all said and done and I guess litigated by the Post Audit Committee, they're making more money right now than the governor. They just it only advanced their careers, if anything. You know, it's funny how nothing gets done. There's no accountability. And again, you know, I really would be remiss if I didn't continue to call up my fellow media organizations in Boston for not covering this. I totally agree with you. I don't understand how this is not number one story, round the clock, press the governor on everything, stop the presses on it. It's that big. And I guess people, maybe it's a combination of what I've said earlier with them not wanting to cover it, but also just, I guess, them being used to it. Look how much this happens. I mean, when you're in a state where Billy Bulger, who had Whitey Bulger as his brother and all the corruption going on there, still has like a $250,000 pension. How does that happen?
Yeah. Well, I asked you the other day if, you know, anybody in the press corps kind of like looked down their nose or rolled their eyes when you asked the question, because that's kind of what you expect today. And I guess your question was the only question on this, and they moved on to other things. You said the next question came from a BZ reporter who asked, I don't know, something pretty silly. I can't recall what it was off the top of my head. Daylight savings time. So this is, the extent. But can you imagine if this happened, say, in Florida with Governor DeSantis, a Republican, this kind of contract was handed out? I mean, this would be national news. It would be all over the place. And, or anybody else, a Trump. Can you imagine if this happened in the Trump administration? This kind of a...
Oh, my God, Barry, there'd be no King's protest. You wouldn't be able to drive your car or go for a walk anywhere. There'd be no King's protests on every square inch of the state if that happened.
So another story that you reported on, too, has also grown some legs. And this is the story with Sheriff Haru, where he, refused to honor an ICE detainer on a guy that was arrested in New Bedford, I guess, on some pretty significant gun charges. And Haru just let this guy out on the street and then turned around and, called ICE, amateurs or some idiotic stuff like that. But that is getting some coverage, and people are talking about that. And there's a lot of folks that seem to be quite upset with his reaction and his response. Maybe we're reaching a point where people... I had a story earlier. I led the show today with a Brockton District Court judge ignoring an ICE detainer and released a Haitian illegal immigrant with pending rape charges. Just put him right out there on the street. And so I'm wondering if maybe we're reaching our saturation point with this and people have had enough of it.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And I think also... what it spells out, too, is you see a lot of these dangerous people getting released by these judges or even by these sheriffs. You know, we just had a couple of weeks ago that maniac on the Bourne Bridge, a Panamanian national who's been arrested over 20 times by ICE and DHS, been released dozens of times by state judges after assaulting disabled people and cops. And, you know, you look at what Sheriff Haru is doing, and I look at it as, you know, as a Democrat, even if you're not for reelection, you take these opportunities and you run with them, because you got to remember who his base is. And that's the vast majority of Massachusetts voters, unfortunately, for, in terms of this regard, where they eat this stuff up. Anything anti-Trump, anti-ICE, they're going to eat it up and celebrate it. They loved it that he was on CNN bashing ICE, and they loved it that he was bashing ICE on WBSM and on local TV outlets. And, you know, I think what people get, for the people who are outraged at it, what it comes down to is what Haru and what these judges will hide behind, and then saying, oh, it's state law. We have no choice but to release them. We can't cooperate with ICE, which is all very true. That is very true. You know, it does conflict with state law. There is a federal court case from 2012 from Arizona that said that states cannot enforce federal law. All great. There is no state law, however, that denies you the ability to notify ICE when said dangerous criminal illegal immigrants are leaving, whether you're a judge or whether you're a sheriff. So when Sheriff Haru doubled down, I think he was on with Chris McCarthy last week. I quoted it in my article and said, and he was, he had that point brought to him. He said, I'm still not going to call ICE and cooperate and let them know, which I guess if you look at it on its surface, if you take politics out of it, why wouldn't you let them know? That's just an obvious, if you're releasing a dangerous immigrant rapist and he can get locked up and sent away from this area after he serves his state time, why wouldn't you let federal authorities know?
Yeah. Tom Holman was on, it was Laura Ingraham earlier this week, again, late last week, early this week, talking about Massachusetts and talking about how sanctuary cities, sanctuary states run his agenda. And that's going to be the focus now of where they're going. And, you know, he talked about how Maura Healey is not smart. Those are his words, not smart. She's not smart. And he says she continues to insist that this is not a sanctuary state, yet her policies show something other than that. And Michelle Wu, of course, had her notorious battles with Tom Holman, and she went before Congress to testify. I think she spent about $10,000 of taxpayer money, too, for some coaching before she went to Washington to testify about what a wonderful place Boston is. Safest city, safest big city in the country. And now it seems as though Boston is having a lot of problems in you know, with crime. And I get two officers shot at day before yesterday. What, 13 people shot 4th of July. Now, this not only reflects on Michelle Wu, but this reflects on Governor Healey, because this is the capital city, and she likes to tout Massachusetts as being a safe state as well. And as these numbers continue to go up, this could become an interesting issue in the race coming up for governor, too.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? The first thing I'll say was it was over $100,000 of taxpayer money Wu spent on that coaching. I remember I was at Fox when that happened. So, yeah, a lot more in that regard. You know, Wu, she likes to spend. But, no, you're right, Barry. This is a major issue. Tom Holman, I would respectfully disagree with Tom Holman on Healey being dumb. I think she's very, very intelligent, as you and I have discussed. But I think she, you know, you can be the smartest person in the world. And actually, quite frequently, in my experience, I find the smartest lawyers and doctors you find are sometimes really stupid when it comes to other things. And Healey certainly is not immune to that. You know, I think that it's a symptom when she keeps telling us that Massachusetts is not a sanctuary state, you know when it clearly very much is so, and she's at press conferences with sanctuary state laws. You know, I think that's a symptom of not ever being called on media about it, because the media will just say, okay, well, that's what she said in her press release, that's what we're going to write, and there you go, no questions asked. And that's what she's used to. And same with Michelle Wu. And you're right, you know, Boston, I go up there, you know, a few days a week to the State House, and I've even noticed how, you know, I mean, I haven't seen direct crime or anything like that. I'm in a relatively good area of Boston at the State House, but you see it on the way in, the, you know, kind of the dilapidation of some of the city streets. You certainly have seen it for years over by the hospitals, especially with the methadone mile. And, you know, you start seeing it in other sections of the city. And as you just said, you know, the 13 people shot or hurt over the weekend, the cops being shot at. Our city reporter, Gayla, I don't think has ever been busier, because she's been on top of all this stuff. And, you know, it's something that I think will bite them in the rear end when it comes time for, you know, either whether it's the midterms or even the next general election or, you know, for president. I think that the cities, the sanctuary cities, the Chicago's of the world, the LA's of the world, the Boston's of the world, the more you have this dangerous activity going on, and it's illegal aliens who are behind the wheels of these CDL trucks, or who are causing the mayhem on the Bourne Bridge, or who are shooting up people or doing wrong way crashes, that will bite them in the you know what when it comes time.
So last night I was asked to moderate a debate between Mike Minogue and Brian Shortsleeve in Taunton, and it was a fun experience, except for the fact that Mike Minogue didn't show. So it wound up being a one-on-one discussion with me and Brian Shortsleeve, and about, I don't know, maybe 30 folks that were in the audience got to ask some questions. So it turned out to be a pretty interesting night. Minogue did, I guess, GBH radio, public radio in Boston instead. He did an interview yesterday on GBH. But he's made it clear now. He has articulated that there will be no debates between now and September 1st. And he's just looking straight through and beyond Brian Shortsleeve, something that we've known anyway. And I don't think anybody really has thought anything different would happen. I think we all have come to the conclusion that he's not going to debate. So, I mean, this is the same strategy that the Biden people used against Donald Trump. I mean, he hid in the basement, didn't do a whole lot. I think they wound up having one debate, and it wound up, it was a disaster, and so on and so forth. I can't help but thinking that the people that are managing This is my view, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm probably very wrong. Maybe they know what they're doing, but there's got to be a reason why they don't want this guy out there to be seen with short sleeve. Why is it that he is just not appearing with short sleeve? I don't get it, but I'm sure these people do, and they get paid a lot of money to come up with these strategies.
No, Barry, you're not wrong in your thinking. I've asked the same questions for a while now. You know, I'm one to think that I think they must have had this campaign plan originally. And as you said, too, you know, I'm not the expert. I'm just kind of a reporter. So, you know, he has high paid people, and they very well may be right. You know, time will tell on that. But in my humble opinion, and, you know, from someone who does this for a living and analyzes this stuff for a living and writes on it, I'm one to believe it's not the best strategy in the world. You know, again, when you're doing this and you're ignoring your only opponent in the primary, someone who you really majorly outperformed at the GOP convention, you really could put this all to bed if you a month or two ago just accepted a debate and did it. Whether it turned out good for Minogue or bad, what he could say is, okay, well, I won at the convention, I'm still the front runner, and I debated you. I'm focused on Maura Healey now, and everybody would kind of probably be more on board with that. But when you're leaving that whole question mark open, and you're just giving endless ammunition to the short sleeve campaign, which they have obviously, you know, smartly used. Why wouldn't you? And it does play up the fact, well, hey, you know, this is the fact. Brian Shortsleeve is willing to debate. He said that. He's been out in debates. He showed up with just you. And Mike Minogue has not been willing to debate. That isn't an opinion. That's a fact in plain black and white. And that's going to be the driving force and headline that the short sleeve campaign is going to push. I think, for one, it could really hurt him in the primary. But if he does skate through and he does make it through the primary, then I guess it, hindsight's always 20/20. But I guess you can call it a success. Then I guess he was really driven and focused on Maura Healey that whole time.
Well, you know, if it works for him and he's able to, you know, make it through the primary with pretty good numbers and everything, then I guess the strategist who created this strategy should be given a bonus. But it robs the people, and this is what bothers me. It robs me as a voter from being able to see him interact with Brian Shortsleeve, and or to even express, you know, to answer basic questions, to you know, tell us what he stands for, and so on and so forth, in a not so controlled environment. And so I don't think it's a good strategy, even if it wins on September 1st, because he's got to hit the ground on September 2nd. And you can say what you want. You made the point earlier that Maura Healey is not stupid. She's a, you know, you don't get to be Maura Healey by being stupid. She's got something on the ball, and we may not agree with a lot of what she says and does, but she's got something on the ball that's got her this far. She's one hell of a debater, and she's a good talker, and she is going to be ready for him on September 2nd, and he's got no experience debating at all. And so it's going to be interesting to see how he deals with that.
Yeah, it's not something I would do. I would certainly want to get my feet wet, and, you know, and I wouldn't count practicing debating as, you know, I'm going to practice against my campaign team or my or, you know, someone they hired or my family or something. You got to get out there and have the actual spotlight on you. You know what it's like, Barry, to interview these people during a debate. It's a lot different than a forum, or a lot different than a radio interview in studio with you. It's when you're peppering them with tough questions, and they're both under a spotlight. There is no redo. It's all live. It's a different feel. And when you're against Maura Healey, and she's the king of the hill right now. She knows, as you just said, she knows how to debate. She's an entrenched politician. She's not even probably sweating about debating Minogue Shortsleeve right now. And he's the one with things to prove, not her, in terms of the debate. You know, she's got to prove a lot to us, probably, to a lot of your listenership, probably. But in terms of that debate, she's going into this thing thinking, I don't have to prove anything. I'm already here.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how, if Minogue does win the nomination, how he goes after her, and what he's going to be, you know, because he's not showing his cards right now. So I have no idea what he's going to hit her with coming up. But she's going to hit him with Trump, and from beyond that, I don't know if he's going to have enough time to distinguish himself from Trump. He's got to, as all of the politicians in Massachusetts, John Deaton did this in his discussion with Seth Moulton. You know, as you know, you covered this thing. You know, put your hand out. Hey, I'm John Deaton here. I'm not Donald Trump. But somehow or another, short sleeve or Minogue have to establish that. And they have to establish that early on. I'm not Trump. And they have to find a way to get that through to the voters. I am not Trump. And I think the longer you hide under the bed, the more difficult that's going to be for him.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Because what do you see in every press conference that Healey does, especially when it's campaign related or related to national news? It's always against Trump. That's what every single Democrat candidate, honestly, in the state, if you look at it, is running on. That's their number one platform, is I'm anti-Trump. And that's what the Democrats will eat up. And and what you see right now, and you're right, there has been a real radio silence from Minogue, especially in the last few months. It's like after he won the convention, he just kind of was like, okay, well, I'll see you in September. And, you know, for anybody who's a challenger to any incumbent, you know, you got to get out there. And it's, you almost want to be annoying to people. You know, it's being annoying to somebody with getting out there too much is 20 times better than someone not knowing who you are because they haven't heard from you.
Well, there's a whole different standard when it comes to Trump anyway. And, you know, I was looking at the story this morning, and it was, where was it? It was State House News Service about the appearance that Minogue had yesterday on GBH. And, I mean, even just the headline, Minogue squares support for Trump with goals as governor, as though he has an obligation to square anything, you know, to do with Trump. But they hold you to a different standard. The story says... when co-host Marjorie Egan pressed Minogue about squaring his support for Trump with his devout Catholic faith, he responded by saying he doesn't know the president. Well, now that's, you know, you kind of got a Judas moment there. But why has he, as a Catholic, got to square his support of Trump any more than anybody else?
No, you're right. That's definitely a pointed bias question. And, you know, certainly Marjorie Egan and Jim Browdy are, you know, pros at just asking Democrats easy questions and asking Republicans pointed questions. I mean, I've listened to them, unfortunately, too many times now. But they, you're right. I don't understand why. And you know what? They don't do the same thing with Healey or Campbell or anybody else. You know, I think I'm pretty sure there's got to be, you know, there's definitely a lot of Democrats in the state who are still Christian, if they still even have a religion, you know, because they're all turning socialists now. But, you know, I've never heard a Democrat be asked that kind of question. You're a Christian, you know, and you're a Democrat. Do you support, pro-life? You know, they would never ask that to a Democrat.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, again, you're throwing the Catholic thing out there, too, which is another point. And you know, why don't they, ask Maura Healey about her support for, I don't know, same-sex marriage or men in women's sports, which she reaffirmed this week, and her support for abortion and so on and so forth. As a Catholic, well, how do you do this? You know, or as a Christian, how do you? But you don't get that same kind of questioning, and it's frustrating. Tim, I got to let you go. I know you got to get back to work. You got more important things to do than gabbing with me this afternoon, and I'm running way over here. I appreciate you sticking around so long, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again next week.
Sounds good, Barry.
All right, Tim Dunn, political reporter for the Boston Herald. Always a pleasure to have Tim on the program. And we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we got some stuff to talk about. And we'll do so right after this. Stay tuned.
Back to Barry Richard on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
All righty, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it on this beautiful sunny Friday afternoon. Press release sent out today by Senator Sheldon Whitehouse in Rhode Island. You know, talking about different standards for different people in politics, right? And the press release says that on Monday at 10 a.m., environmental, labor, and consumer advocates will be joined by members of Rhode Island's congressional delegation at Johnson and Wales University to call out the Trump administration's baseless attacks on offshore wind. Since March, the Department of the Interior has made unprecedented use of the Treasury Department's Judgment Fund to make $2.7 billion in payouts to companies to vacate their offshore wind leases in exchange for fossil fuel development. As President Trump continues to wage his war on wind, the administration's attacks on offshore wind are jeopardizing clean energy projects that would have delivered affordable, reliable energy to millions of U.S. families and businesses. Yeah, it's such a lie. And anybody who pays attention to this stuff knows that's a lie. By the way, Jack Reed is going to be at that press conference with him. Sheldon Whitehouse, Jack Reed, Representative Seth Magaziner, Gabe Amo, is that how he pronounces it? Gabe Amo, the congressman, and a whole bunch of granola activists are going to be there as well. And, you know, so you listen to this bullcrap, right? you know, Trump's policy is jeopardizing clean energy projects that would have delivered affordable, reliable energy to millions of U.S. families and businesses. You know, we spoke just a few moments ago with Tim Dunn at the Herald about, you know, how these politicians are allowed to say these kind of things and just never get checked by the media. And, you know, Tim covered a story here in New Bedford just recently where Maura Healey came down and she had all the labor union folks and everything marveling about what a wonderful world it is now that we have windmills offshore. And she talked about the blizzard. Remember the blizzard? Well, you know, the blizzard, you know, where thank God for these windmills. If these windmills weren't here, people here in New Bedford just would not have had any heat. Thank God for these windmills. They delivered. And Tim did the research and found that less than 4% of the energy that got us through the blizzard in February came from windmills and other alternative forms of energy. That the state actually tapped into nuclear and tapped into 85% of the energy that we used to get through that was oil. If thank God for the oil. If the oil wasn't there, we would be still frozen blocks in our kitchens and living rooms because we wouldn't have had the power that we needed to get through. So they boldface lie right to your face and nobody checks it. There's a whole gaggle of press around and not one person says, really, Governor, how much energy did these windmills actually contribute to the grid that kept these folks warm? Nobody asked because maybe she would have had to say, well, actually not that much, less than 4% of these windmills and all of the other alternative energy sources in Massachusetts that you spend gazillions on in your monthly bill with all of those fees and surcharges and everything else. You spend to support these alternative energy projects that contributed less than 4%. To the grid to keep you warm, oil, 85%. They had to tap oil. They had to get oil. They had to get oil in here in order to generate electricity for heat. The absurdity of it. And yet Sheldon Whitehouse and Jack Reed, one of the biggest disappointments I've ever met, Jack Reed, because he was such a good legislator when he was in the Rhode Island General Assembly. I used to cover him. He was one of the people I covered and as a reporter. And he's gone off the liberal deep end now. He's one of these loons. And it's too bad. But you know, Sheldon Whitehouse. Clean energy projects that would have delivered affordable, reliable energy to millions of U.S. families and businesses. Hey, liar, liar, windmill on fire, right? 508-996-0500. Going to do the break. We're going to come right back. Stay tuned.
Back to Barry Richard on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
All right. Well, welcome back. It is 1:47 on a Friday afternoon. I understand a good time was had by all last night in the downtown area. Congratulations to all of the folks who are keeping Joe Jesus 50s night alive. And very well attended from what I understand. There was a whole bunch of musical and classic cars and people just wandering around, enjoying themselves, having a good time. There's also a new music concert series on Thursday nights in the downtown. Now, if you don't know about it, it's at the Custom House Square on Thursdays from 6 to 8. And there's a Bob Marley band, a tribute band down there last night. I missed it all, but I would have enjoyed that very much. But I was born in the 50s, but I don't remember much about the 50s. I was still a little kid when it became the 60s. So, but it's a good time and carries on the memory of Joe Jesus. So it's a good cause. And WBSM is involved with it every year. A small part. I mean, we don't drive the cars there. We don't, you know, do that. But we have a little presence there, and it's always good to see folks. So I kind of missed it last night. Tonight is the opening night for Escape to Margaritaville, the Jimmy Buffett musical that opens at the Zyterian Theater tonight. And looking forward to that. I'm going to be there for that. It's going to be a great night because the Summer Sound Concert Series resumes this week in downtown New Bedford. So there's going to be some music playing downtown. I'm not sure if they're on the foot of Union Street this week or if they're up on Pleasant Street. On Purchase Street. I think they're on Union, but I'm not sure. But in any event, remember when Purchase Street was a mall, a pedestrian mall? Remember that? Nice thought, but it just never took off. But anyway, so that's going on. Margaritaville is going on. You can still get tickets for Margaritaville. And it's going to be a great show. It's going to be nice and air conditioned in the Z. It's always freezing in there, so I always bring a jacket when I go to the Z. Oh, but I'm looking forward to that. So that's going to be some fun. I was last night in Taunton for the cable access and media. Supposed to be a debate between the two Republican candidates for governor of Massachusetts, but only one showed. I think it's really rude when you're invited to show up and talk to people and you just blow it off. You just like, you know, it doesn't matter to you. You just blow it off. But so Brian Shortsley was there. Mike Minogue was not there. And so it was essentially a discussion, me and Brian and a couple of dozen people that were there in the audience, maybe 30 people. Asked some good questions, and we had a good time. By the time I got back to New Bedford, all the festivities were over, and so I'll get to be downtown tonight. But Minogue was on GBH radio. Republican gubernatorial candidate Mike Minogue put some daylight between himself and President Trump in a radio interview Thursday, and also explained what he would do as governor to deal with the fallout from federal changes to Medicaid. So Minogue has a responsibility to distance himself from Trump. Why? Because GBH says so? By the way, has anybody else noticed that, you know, we heard for years. Remember Mitt Romney was the first actual president to come out. He wasn't president. Oh, my God, there was a Freudian slip. A presidential candidate to come out. And, you know, talk about defunding public broadcasting. And everybody accused him of wanting to kill Big Bird and this, that, and the other thing. And that didn't go very far. Donald Trump came in and did it. You know, it was usually the other guys talk about it. Trump comes in and does it. And so Trump came in and defunded public broadcasting. And we heard about how, you know, farmers out in the Midwest and other rural people were going to die because they weren't going to have any connection to news. They weren't going to know what's going to go on because they couldn't get PBS. All PBS was going to go off the air and this, that, and the other thing. Big Bird was going to be... None of that happened. As usual, the media way overplays itself. And GBH is still there. Public broadcasting is still there. And, you know, public broadcasting is, you know, they're getting you to give donations to keep them on the air, which is fine. You want to donate, you like PBS, you want to donate to PBS, great. That's wonderful. That's the way the country should work. The taxpayer should not be forced to fund, especially an operation like PBS, which has become an extreme left-wing mouthpiece. I don't want my taxpayer money going to fund extreme left-wing mouthpieces. But, I mean, if you want to donate to keep GBH on the air, that's fine. That's cool. I have no problem with that. Or they can go out and get corporate sponsorships, or they can actually hire some salespeople. We got a great sales staff here. We got Pam. We got two Sues. Decided a new guy named Pat, who used to work at Channel 12. You know, Mark's our GM. We got a Kristen. We got a great bunch of people. Mike does our digital sales and so on and so forth. Great group of salespeople that go out there and they sell us all the wonderful commercials you hear, the sponsors that you hear on our station, because we have a sales staff that goes out and says, hey, we have a product. Would you like to help sponsor that? I mean, I got Bill Bashan and Nancy Duncan and my buddy, you know, over here at Riccardi's. They say, hey, we like Barry. He says, makes sense, Orga. We want to sponsor you. Well, that's the way that's supposed to work. Not supposed to take taxpayer money. Anyway, so the formerly taxpayer-funded GBH folks sat around with Mike Minogue yesterday, and Marjorie Egan pressed Minogue about squaring his support for Trump. Why does he have to square his support for Trump? Doesn't he have a right to support Trump? With his devout Catholic faith. I don't understand the question. Trump is a devout religious person. He's devoted to his religion. He's, you know, he's pro-life. So why is it that Minogue, being a Catholic, has to square his support for Trump? He said, I don't know the president, but I am a Republican. And so as a Republican, I supported the Republican Party. That election happened, and the voters had their say. I'm only focused right now on running for governor of Massachusetts. 2 years into the next term, there's going to be a new president. And whether that president is a Republican or a Democrat, I think it's refreshing that we're going to have a governor that only cares about what is best for our people, for our entrepreneurs and businesses. That's the kind of governor I would be. And that's, you know, a sensible answer. You know, hello, media people. Hello, Governor Healey. We are not Trump. Yeah, we're not Trump. We're Brian Schwartzleben and Mike Minogue. You know, the thing is, the idiot Democrats don't understand that you have to have a working relationship with the White House, regardless of who the president is. Because Minogue's right. In 2 years, there's going to be another president. And we have to work with whoever it is. Otherwise, you have a situation like with Maura Healey, where she applies for financial disaster aid money for the blizzard and gets turned down. Because we have nobody in Massachusetts government that can speak to the White House. They burned all their bridges. So there's nobody. I understand Brian Shortsleeve has actually written a letter to President Trump saying, can we please have some money? So we'll see how that works out. Quick break, we'll come in. All right, welcome back. If you remember about a week or so ago, we were talking about Representative Ellen Sylvia from Fall River, who dared to stand up to the speaker and in Boston and stand with Diana DeSaglio, who was fighting, and the citizens of Massachusetts